This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. Our guest today is Jenny Kraska, Executive Director of the Maryland Catholic Conference. Jenny grew up in Prior Lake, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis. She attended the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, where she graduated with a double major in Catholic Studies and Theology with a minor in Latin. I took 5 years of Latin too, so I think I know. We both know how useful that is in real life.
Exactly.
She continued her graduate studies at St. Thomas, where she earned her Doctor of Law degree and a Master's degree in Catholic Studies. Jenny worked as a research attorney before moving to Colorado. And in 2007, Jenny became Executive Director of the Colorado Catholic Conference before she came to Maryland. She has served as President of the National Association of State Catholic Conference Directors, as a consultant to several USCCB, that's the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, committees, and as a board member of Catholic Rural Life. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Let's talk first, as we get into this, we're coming up on Election Day, but early voting in Maryland opens, you know, during October. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, I think, as they get ready to go to the polls, they see that the sample ballots that get mailed to them, they see the issues that are on the ballot, they see the candidates who are on the ballot. How do you, as a Catholic conference administrator, as somebody who helps form people and inform people about the issues, how do you help them understand why a Catholic conscience is important when you go to the voting booth?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, especially in, you know, the political environment in which we're in. It's a question that I get often, and it's sometimes a difficult question because we are in such a partisan and very messy political sort of environment that we're living through right now, both state-wise, country-wise. A lot of people just like to sort of stay out of politics altogether, which I can't blame them for. But it is really important. As Catholics, we have a duty and a right to make our voices heard in the public square. And we do that by forming our conscience. And I think a lot of people hear that term and they're not really sure, what exactly does that mean? And how do I form my conscience? And a lot of it is, you know, making sure that you're reading, that you're going to good sources. We have incredible resources that we make available through our Catholic Conference website, but a lot of parishes put out incredible material as well. And I would just encourage people, you know, one of the documents, and I'm sure people who are listening to this might have heard of it, but I'm guessing that most people have not picked it up, but it is the Faithful Citizenship Guide that the Catholic bishops put out every 4 years. And it is a wonderful resource in terms of helping to form consciences. And I would really encourage people, we have a link to it on our website. You can go to USCCB's website. I'm sure maybe even your website has a link to it somewhere, but it really is, as much as we talk about it, and I think people have probably heard reference to it, it's a fairly short document. It's not long. And it really does give you a lot to think about in terms of Catholic social teaching and how we as Catholics should really approach the election season.
Mm-hmm. And our own Archbishop William Laurie was one of the people who has been part of drafting that statement and updating it every 4 years. So there's another local tie into that. Exactly. Does it get kind of defeatist where we look at this and we say, you know what, none of these candidates are in line with everything that we believe and teach as a Catholic Church? Mm-hmm. I mean, none of them. There just aren't candidates out there like that. I know that the Maryland Catholic Conference has often been referred to as neither red nor blue, it's purple. Mm-hmm. Because some of the issues would be in accord with Republican principles, some would be in accord with Democratic principles, some cross the aisle, and there are some things there. But does it get to the point where we just say, there's no good choice, I'm not going to vote?
I think some people, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, do feel that way. And I understand why. I mean, I totally do. The way politics are in society today, it's very difficult sometimes not to just try and think that that's the only solution. I've often heard it said that as Catholics, we are politically homeless
Yes.
when it comes to the United States. And that's a very true statement. We are. There is no party, as you've said, that really encapsulates all of Catholic teaching. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't vote. I don't think that is the answer. For as disappointing as it may be sometimes, when we choose not to participate, when we choose not to make our voices heard, we're really doing a disservice. We're not always going to get our candidate elected or our priorities elected. But as soon as we stop having a voice, other voices come in, and other voices are sometimes louder, sometimes carry more weight with them, and their policies and their candidates win out. And so I don't think that we can ever get to the point as Catholics where we say, we're just not going to vote. As difficult as it may be from time to time, I don't believe that the solution is ever not voting. I think that we have a duty, again, to get out and make our voices heard, because if we're not, somebody else is.
And some of those somebody else is often bringing a lot of money to this, too, often from out of state to support certain issues, right?
Right. And not necessarily issues or taking positions that we would agree with. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's really important that we not give up, and that we continue to really, make our voices. All we can do at the end is, make sure that we are out there voting. Obviously, there's a lot we can do, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit. But yes, I think we always should take the opportunities that we have to vote.
Mm-hmm. When you look at what's going on in the country, but especially in our state, because that's really where your bailiwick lies. Mm-hmm. When you hope to inform people, it's not just about the voting too. It's also about, once people are elected and the legislative session starts, you want people to be informed about these things. How can people be informed throughout the year on the topics that are important to Catholics?
That's a great question. I think the easiest way, I would really encourage your listeners to sign up for our legislative network through the Maryland Catholic Conference. If they go to our website, there's a link on the front page for our advocacy network. And that allows you to get, we try not to overwhelm your inbox with lots of emails, but during the legislative session, especially, we send out weekly e-letters that kind of recap what's been happening during the legislative session for the week. And we also send out alerts so that you can directly have ways to contact your legislators about the issues that we believe are the most important ones that are making their way through the legislative process. And we make it really easy for anyone who's ever clicked on one of our action alerts. We try to literally, you type in your name and your address and you hit a button, and that sends it to all the legislators that you need to. So we really do try to make it as easy as possible for people to be involved.
And can people kind of pick and choose the issues that they want to follow? So if someone's focused on immigration rights, they can make sure they follow that. If they're focused on abortion and other life issues, they can focus on that. Is that an option?
It is, absolutely. Yeah, you can sign up for, we have a few different options of categories that you can sign up for. You can sign up for all of them, or you can just sign up for ones, again, that you're most interested in.
Mm-hmm. When you talk to people, and you get out around the state a lot, I know you do, to talk to folks, what are you hearing are the concerns that they're bringing to the voting booth this year?
There's a lot of concerns that I think people are bringing to the voting booth. We have we'll get into this a little bit later, but question one, obviously, that is on the ballot this year, is a concern that people have that they're bringing forward, that they want to learn more about, they want to know more about it. I think just in general, there's a lot of concerns around education of children, of parental rights, and what that means in Maryland. And so those are a lot of, the different issues. We're also hearing things around the issue of the poor and the vulnerable, health care, you name it. I mean, depending on what parish I'm at and where in the state I'm at, the issues vary, but they all fall somewhere within Catholic social teaching that are really priorities for people.
Mm-hmm. When we get to the legislative session, how many bills do you follow? I mean, it's an enormous amount, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, a lot. So in a 90-day session, it is not uncommon for us to see over 2,500 bills introduced. We sift through all of them. We don't obviously take positions. That would be, you know, impossible. And nor would we need to take positions on all bills. But we usually from session to session, it's somewhere between, you know, I would say 200 to 300 bills. It kind of varies in between that realm somewhere.
So you're looking at about 10% of the bills that come across when the legislature, you know, starts getting into the nitty-gritty, yeah. Right?
Yes.
What's your website so that people can go and take a look at that?
It's mdcatholic.org.
Very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we get back with Jenny Kraska, we're going to talk a little bit, especially about some of the specific issues that they've talked with candidates about, and especially a topic that is of great importance, and that is Maryland Question 1, the Right to Reproductive Freedom Act. We're talking today with Jenny Kraska, Executive Director of the Maryland Catholic Conference. This is Chris Gunty, and you're listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Archdiocese of Baltimore makes the protection of children a leading priority in its parishes, schools, and other ministries. The Archdiocese seeks to keep kids safe through training and background checks and by implementing a zero-tolerance policy for anyone credibly accused of abusing a child. For more information about the Archdiocese's efforts to keep our children safe, please visit www.archbalt.org/accountability.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in Baltimore is nearing completion of a long-anticipated $2.75 million project to revamp its lighting. Father Louis Bianco, rector, said the lighting project restores the original intent of the 1959 lighting design, which had cast warm light throughout the building. Parish leaders also wanted to make the space more welcoming and provide adequate lighting for parishioners to see more clearly, he said. Over the decades, the quality of the lighting declined significantly inside the neo-Gothic building, as many of the large light bulbs inside 450-pound brass chandeliers kept burning out right after they were replaced some 75 feet overhead. Jeff Yingling, president of Hirsch Electric, the lighting company that worked on the project with Rambusch Lighting Company, said the uplight function of the fixtures never really worked to their fullest potential because the old incandescent-style light fixtures generate so much heat that they were basically baking themselves, he said. Lighting was inconsistent, and the ceiling, which is a work of art in itself, was never properly illuminated. The ornate chandeliers were retrofitted with modern LED lights without altering their original appearance. Edwin Rambusch of Rambusch Lighting said a new Kasambi wireless control system was installed on each fixture, allowing lighting to be dimmed or enhanced for different liturgical settings. As part of the lighting project, the cathedral also installed glass doors behind the bronze doors at the main entrance to the cathedral, allowing natural light to bathe the narthex. Father Bianco noted that the lighting project was originally projected to be $3 million, but has come in under budget and ahead of schedule. It is part of a larger $6 million Vision of Hope campaign that will also include improvements at the school of the cathedral. So far, $4.5 million has been raised. For more on this story, visit CatholicReview.org. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, I'm George Matisek.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. We are talking today with Jenny Kraska, who is Executive Director of the Maryland Catholic Conference. Jenny's an attorney and a specialist in Catholic studies, so she knows her stuff on these things when it comes to it. Jenny, every 2 years, the Maryland Catholic Conference gets together with publications such as the Catholic Review, the Catholic Standard in Washington, the Dialogue in Wilmington, Delaware, all of which encompass parts of Maryland, and puts together a questionnaire that goes out to candidates. It goes out for the primaries and then again for the general election. Mm-hmm. What kind of questions do you ask potential candidates so that they can see what kind of issues are important, or the kind of overarching issues that are important to the Maryland Catholic Conference?
Yeah, every time we do this, we really try to, and it's really necessary for us. We're not allowed to just be a one issue candidate survey guide type of thing. So we have to ask a variety.
And we're not a one issue church.
Right, exactly. We're not a one issue church. And so we really try to span the breadth. We can't ask questions about every issue of Catholic social teaching, but we use Catholic social teaching as our guide in terms of how we formulate the questions and what types of questions we ask. And sometimes it is dependent on, so for example, this year we have this election cycle in Maryland, there's not state level candidates. It's all candidates who are going to be in Congress or the Senate. So it's federal. So, you know, we also try to get our questions, you know, that are specific to either federal or state issues that might be happening. But really, we try to make them broad questions that can sometimes cover, you know, multiple different aspects of an issue. We ask questions about the environment, about religious liberty, about life, poverty, healthcare, immigration, you name it, just depending again on the year that we're in, what issues might be at the forefront of people's minds. That's really how we try to draft questions. And we also want to keep it short. We don't want to ask, you know, 100 questions or something, or even 10 questions. I mean, we want to keep it short so that people are more, we hope, more likely to answer it.
I think this year it's 7 questions, I think was the total.
Yes.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that the candidate, you kind of put out a statement on that, and then the candidates can say they either agree or disagree. Mm-hmm. They also can provide a 50 word or so response if they want to, and that's also hosted on your website. We don't print those in the Catholic Review. We print the agree or disagree grid, but those are, that gives the candidate a chance to kind of give an additional response if they want to. One of the things that I see that I find a little bit disappointing is that not everyone responds to that survey. And I know you try valiantly to get them to respond to the survey. You know,
we do.
You know, emails and phone calls and, you know, follow-ups and all of that stuff. Why do you think people just, that they don't respond to a fairly large constituency in the state?
You know, I'm always a little bit perplexed by that as to why they don't. We make it known that this is getting out far and wide. There's a lot of Catholics in the state of Maryland, and you know, they have the opportunity to get their name out there, to get their positions out there. And a lot of people choose not to respond. I think some of it is some candidates, we have been told, just have a policy that they don't answer any surveys at all during election season from anybody. So I think that is probably part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is, you know, it could be that it's from the Catholic Church and maybe they don't agree with the church, or they don't want to be, you know, seen as answering surveys from one faith denomination and maybe not another, if there are others that would ask those questions. And some people, we just don't know why, to be honest with you. I mean, it's anybody's guess.
Yeah, I was particularly disappointed that neither Senate candidate responded to the survey, because then that way we don't get a sense from either Larry Hogan or Angela Alsobrooks where they stand on some of these issues.
We were very disappointed too that we didn't get either one to answer. It was really, you know, I feel to their detriment in terms of they missed an opportunity to speak to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Let's segue a little bit to Maryland Question 1, which is going to be on the ballot.
Yes.
The Right to Reproductive Freedom Act. First of all, what is that? It's a constitutional amendment, but what mm-hmm. does it say? What does it mean?
Sure. At its heart, what it's a fairly short ballot initiative in terms of something that's going to be put in the Constitution. I would encourage folks to go to our website. Again, we have the actual language. Many people might have already received their ballot, so maybe they're looking at that language. But it's about a paragraph, maybe in length. And what it would do in its essence is to enshrine abortion into our state constitution here in Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And why is that a bad idea?
It's a really bad idea because it will disallow us, it will make it very difficult for us, if not almost impossible. It's not completely impossible, but nearly impossible for us to ever in the future pass legislation. What I would say is really common sense legislation and protections for women and children around the issue of reproductive health and abortion.
Mm-hmm. Maryland is already one of the most favorable in terms of abortion rights and, yes, and abortion legislation. So it doesn't seem like we need to have a constitutional amendment when there's so many laws that exist. Wildly hypothetical situation. There is evolution over the next decades of the science that goes behind the start of life in the womb. There is a evolution of the thinking of people in Maryland about abortion and reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. That ends up getting reflected in the kinds of people who are elected to the Maryland State Legislature and the General Assembly. With this constitutional amendment in place, if all of those evolutions happen, it would still be really hard to change the laws, right?
Yes, it would be. It would be extraordinarily difficult. The only way that we could possibly change the law at that point is either by passing another constitutional amendment, which would undo this one if it passes,
right,
or if the federal government passed some type of constitutional amendment that would supersede a state constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. And the fact is that because it's a constitutional amendment, it takes a wider threshold, a larger threshold to pass, correct?
Yes, it's much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that those who are advocating for this are afraid in some ways that people's thinking on this will evolve over time.
Yes, they want to make sure that it is, again, nearly impossible, that it is locked up, that it is there is no ability for us to, even if we do evolve, as you said, that we have really no options, no recourse to change the law.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a little bit that this would affect some pretty common sense things to protect women, to protect children. And that's, you know, things like the way abortions are conducted and all of that. Talk a little bit about that, because I think people don't understand that even if you don't try to restrict abortion, there are things that are happening in the state that aren't helpful for women who are in difficult crisis pregnancies.
Exactly.
We know for a fact that Maryland is one of the few states that does not even track information on abortions. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things would you like to see, even if we can't restrict abortion itself, what kinds of protections would you like to see for women that Maryland doesn't allow now and that certainly wouldn't be allowed after if question one passes?
Right. I think namely in number one, it's one of the major misconceptions that people are they're just not aware of is that Maryland allows abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. And I think even people who would say that they agree with the idea of having abortion believe that there should be some limits on when that can occur. So I think one of the primary goals would be to say we should restrict. I think most people would say, if you look at polling that's out there, abortion should not occur in the third trimester of a pregnancy. I mean, I think that is, you know, you get down into the second trimester and it gets down to, you know, a certain number of weeks. But I think in general, a lot of people, regardless of where they fall on the issue, would say third trimester abortions should not be happening. I think there should be protections. We do know that, again, just based on, as you said, we don't have data in Maryland. Maryland is one of two states in the country that in 2004, Maryland decided to stop tracking and sending data regarding abortions in Maryland to the CDC. So we have not had any real up-to-date hard data to be looking at. But we do know from other states that, for example, when babies are born alive during the course of an abortion, that in Maryland, there's no laws around what should happen to that child when they're born alive. And so I would like to see protections in place for those children as well. And I think, again, those are very common sense things that a lot of people could agree with and do agree with. We know from polling, I think even a majority of Marylanders would say there should be some restrictions around that. There should be data collection. I would think that we would want data collection, to know what's happening, to know why it's happening, to know if it's happening with certain segments of our population, so that we can, look into that and know why that's happening. There's a lot of reasons why you collect data. So it surprises me, and it's very disappointing that Maryland doesn't collect statistics on that. So things like that. I mean, then there's other, protections that we've seen in other states, like waiting periods, the ability, the option for a woman to see an ultrasound before she receives an abortion. All of those kind of things, I think, are real common sense things that, should happen and may be able to happen at some point with, a certain evolution in Maryland. But if this passes, this amendment, any of those things that I just discussed would be nearly impossible, if not completely impossible, to pass.
Good points. Well, if you want some more information on the Maryland Catholic Conference and the issues it addresses, go to mdcatholic.org. If you want some specific information on Maryland Question 1, the Right to Reproductive Freedom Act, as it's called, go to mdcatholic.org/vote-no. We have been talking today with Jenny Kraska, who is Executive Director of the Maryland Catholic Conference. Thank you so much for being with us today, Jenny.
Thank you for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Don't forget, be informed, inform your conscience, and go out and vote. This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review, and you have been listening to Catholic Review Radio.
The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full-time. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice-weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Read it today in print or online at catholicreview.org. That's catholicreview.org.
Tune in to Catholic Review Radio next week, available on WMET 1160 AM and 103.1 FM. Also, WSJF 92.7 FM in the Sykesville area and WVTO 92.7 FM in Baltimore City. Check us out on SoundCloud or your favorite podcast app.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.